In cyberspace, no one can hear you scream. Forgive us for the dramatic opening, but we are in Spooktober after all, the month of both Halloween and cybersecurity awareness. Coincidence? We think not. Cybersecurity and Halloween actually have more in common than you think. Both feature tales of malevolent beings operating in the dark. Both involve people pretending to be people they're not. And both cost us millions of pounds every year. Those pumpkins won't buy themselves. But cyber attacks aren't just a ghost story told to scare us. The threats the charity sector face are very real. More than half of high-income charities surveyed by the Department for Culture, Media and Sport said they experienced a cyber attack in 2020, with 700 organisations experiencing a breach in the 7 months between March and October alone. So we best start believing in cyber ghost stories, else we might well be in one. Here at Charity Digital, we're not about hiding behind the sofa. We want to face our fears head on. So spooky though this podcast promises to be, and I apologise now for all the puns, we will also be offering you some solutions and thinking about ways that the charity sector can protect itself going forward. Let's think of cyber criminals like vampires. Yes, they're scary, but you have to invite them in first. And if you do, make sure you've got garlic on hand. My name is Laura Stanley, content writer at Charity Digital, and I'll be your horrifying host for this podcast. Today, I'm joined by our very own Chris Hall, head of marketing, our events manager, Mimi Murrill, and Nick Wyatt, our growth marketing executive. In the spirit of Halloween, I thought it'd be best if we started by telling the cyber stories that have scared us the most. I'm sure we've all seen a headline or two that's made us wince or maybe even been affected ourselves. So let's start with those howlers. What is the scariest cyber horror story you can recall? Mimi, shall we kick off with you?
Yeah, I feel like I might be the best to start on this. I used to work quite closely with Cub from the NCSC, and he told me that this one a while ago about the WannaCry attack that happened in May 2017. It hit around 2,300,000 computers globally and spread through computers using Microsoft Windows, where users' files were essentially held hostage and Bitcoin ransomware was demanded for their release. The interesting side of this story is that actually the ransom wasn't that much. So in the research that I looked into it, it was around $300, which is a lot still, especially to the sector, but it's not as much compared to the average of over $100,000. So people looked into this more and found that actually the attack was to cause chaos and panic and actually just make... It caused a lot of impact on the NHS, mostly with actually ambulances being derouted to other locations when they were out to help people. And it was all through attacking people through that Microsoft update. We'll go into kind of what people need to do later on, but that's one that stayed with me for quite a long time. Even though the ransom was low, the overall cost worldwide is around $4 billion in losses. And also still today in 2021, the attacks are still happening.
That's a very haunting note there.
to leave on that last note.
A horror film in its own right. I feel like I'm on some sort of murder mystery podcast.
Chaos.
Am I in the right place?
Who else has got a terrifying horror story for us? Let's continue this campfire moment.
I don't mind jumping in. So yeah, mine is more of a personal one really, because in 2011 PlayStation basically were subjected to a cyber attack where they lost about 77 million accounts, and mine was definitely included in that, because I've been subjected to lots of horrors on PlayStation ever since this day, including my account being hacked multiple times and other spooky business. But I think the key takeaway with this one is that afterwards it kind of got leaked that the reason it happened was because they had really poor security and they knew about it, but attempted to basically do nothing about it. I think they had leaked emails with files containing multiple people's account passwords, which were easily found, and none of it was blocked or encrypted. And I think, like, obviously there was huge amounts of damages to it, but I think the key takeaway was that my trust in PlayStation, a brand that I've used my entire life, is completely shattered. And, you know, you can apologize after these things, but at the end of the day, now every time I use this company, I never, ever, like, keep my card details there. I always put usually fake details or extra passwords I don't ever use because just don't trust them at all to, with my details, especially given also, I think about 4 years later, they had another huge breach where afterwards that also got leaked that they knew it was going to happen, but didn't do anything about it, which the true negligence of that moment was just awful. And I think when you have millions and millions of people's details that you just let all this out and then people, your information is just running around on the internet because someone just really didn't care with it. Especially given, you know, Sony's a household name. I think everyone knows who they are. And I reckon a lot of people have probably got an account with them to be just not really care about your details and to know it out loud is pretty huge. And I just... The fact that they lied about it afterwards too and tried to give out some free games and said it wasn't as bad as it was, and the post, you know, just pre-dealing with it was poor, the post-dealing with it was poor. And, you know, at the time I was 16 and the biggest thing I actually cared about was that I wasn't allowed to play online for 23 days. But, you know, in the long run, it's affected me a lot. I mean, I can't remember how many years back, but someone hacked into my Sony account and I can't not believe that it was part of that as well. And I lost about 160 quid, you know, 7-8 years later. And luckily I managed to get some of it back, but some of the purchases they made were not refundable. But, you know, like I said a second ago, the key takeaway here was just trust shattered, and my relationship with the brand is completely tarnished and will never be the same again.
Like any good horror story, that is lasting with you, isn't it?
It makes me sad. Yeah. That's what it does. It makes me sad. I still use PlayStation. That's the worst bit. But safely.
That's a point within its own, though, isn't it? And I mean, I can pick up and run with it from here. But first of all, I want to say I'm thoroughly inspired by that introduction, Laura. Very spooked out.
Fantastic.
And excited. Like, I think I'm going to go knock on the neighbour's doors and ask for chocolate after this.
That'll be their own horror story.
That will be, yeah. Something good.
Geordie man turns up for candy.
It's one way to ingratiate myself with the new neighbours. But the one that sort of immediately springs to mind for me is Blackboard with that ransom attack back in 2020. Hackers managed to get a hold of some personal and in some cases financial information, over 100 universities and charities there. But that's not the one I really want to focus on, actually. I think the most pertinent ones for charities, and I think what the one that charities can learn from more is Mermaid's data breach that actually came to light in 2019 and was back in the news and press this year as well. Breach was actually related to an internal sort of private email group that had been set up way back in 2016, 2017. And it actually was set up while the charity was actually decommissioned. So the true essence of the breach actually didn't really come to light until a few years later, when an investigation revealed that the group that I mentioned had been created with sort of insufficient security settings. This in turn meant that around 780 pages of confidential emails between trustees and executives were able to be viewed online for almost 3 years. Those pages contained personal information such as names and email addresses, and had the information of over 550 people, all of which were searchable online, albeit through very accurate and specific search terms. And while I think Mermaid did the right thing in reporting the breach to the ICO, and they got out in front of it with the affected users, and I've actually made quite a lot of good inroads since, the mistake did cost them £25,000 in fines. Money that, you know, many charities can't afford to lose. And I think in this instance, you know, the issue is at a leadership level. And don't get me wrong, I do believe that leaders and charities need to do a lot more to ensure that their organisation, the staff in that organisation, the donors and service users, they need to do a lot more to make sure they are protected, trained, and are also thinking with cyber front of mind. But I think the key takeaway from me here is that I think anyone in an org can be a cyber leader, and there's a lot of work that can be done from the bottom up that'll help leadership take cybersecurity a little bit more seriously. So I feel like that's a bit of a psychological thriller more than a horror story, but it's a deep thinker that'll keep you coming back to it day for days afterwards.
I feel like that's like a Leonardo movie.
It is. It's a Shutter Island-esque sort of thing.
Didn't want to say the title. Are we allowed to say titles?
Well, we're in trouble if not.
There's many islands out there. We don't know which one we're talking about.
Iconic island.
The next podcast will be Charity Digital's copyright breach.
A horror story in itself. Yeah. That's the thing though, isn't it? That we know that we all know these stories. We know that charities know these stories. You know, our survey with the National Centre for Cybersecurity told us that charities understand the importance of cybersecurity, like pretty overwhelmingly, but changing our behaviour is more difficult. Do you think we are starting to see a change in how people are reacting to cyber threats?
Yeah, I actually had a look at this survey recently and I found it quite interesting. One of the big things that pointed out to me were that one of the stats of 40% noticed an increase in breaches in the sector, which then made them want to change their behaviours. And within that, 25% suffered their own breach. But we really struggle from like a content perspective of getting people to talk about those breaches. And I think one of the really big influences is those 25% that suffered their own breach being able to share their own experiences. Because within another question, it was 43% of people are changing their own behaviours because they're learning from their peers. And I think it's giving that platform for the sector to be able to talk about what they've experienced. Like we have ourselves, we went through it as you are aware of, and we are using our own learnings to help educate others. And I think it would really help to have other charities come forward, because unfortunately it is something that we all are going to go through. And the only way we can support each other is by talking about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think generally the sentiment around cybersecurity within the sector at the minute is more positive than I think it has been for a long, long time. And I thought the survey was a great indicator of that. Like you said, you know, 95% of people who answered the survey believed cybersecurity is important. And it actually ranked third highest in regards of importance, only behind fundraising and service delivery. The flip side of that, however, is that the sector only rated their own approach to cybersecurity as 6 out of 10. So for me, this is a very telling narrative. I think it shows that there's a nervousness there. There's a time and resource issue there, which I think we all know about and all feel in the sector at the minute. There's more time going into other areas, and particularly as the survey kind of shows, fundraising and service delivery are where things are important now. And this has been backed up, I think, for us is in the content space that we sit, because we've seen a general lack of engagement over cybersecurity. The webinar we've just done on the survey, I mean, the survey itself had a great response, but generally we've had a much lower engagement rate with cyber content than we've ever had in certainly my time here. And I think that feeds into the fact that there's just more things to focus on at the minute. But I also think there is perhaps some knowledge gaps to learn. I dare I say that I think there's even some complacency. I think there was a worrying stat in the survey for me that 68% sort of believe they're already mature from a security point of view. But then you dig a little bit deeper into the survey and that shows that a lot of people are only using antivirus as a tech tool, for example, as a form of protection. And, you know, antivirus is part of the solution, not the solution. And I think by taking that single track approach to tech protection, it's kind of a bit like going out on a really, really cold day and putting your coat on, but forgetting your hats, your gloves, your thermals, your socks and whatnot. I mean, the reality is that you're a lot more vulnerable. Your more extreme areas of yourself is a lot more vulnerable and a lot more at risk if you don't protect them, for example. So there's a lot of education I think we need to do around some of the finer points within cybersecurity that is more than just antivirus. It's more than just acknowledging it's important. It's about doing, and it's about leaders doing stuff. And as I said previously, it's about employees, staff, users, donors, making organisations accountable at the same time and making leadership accountable. And I think that's the next step the attitude needs to go.
I mean, I feel like there's not much I can really add to Chris and Mimi reading out on the hat there. But I think the point I was going to remit, and I apologize about those spooky sirens in the background. But yeah, I guess the biggest difference I really see with this, and I think the survey told us this, is that the sector's definitely gone from not having a clue to knowing it's there and occasionally caring, basically. And I think that's like speaking to individuals in the sector as well. I know I spoke to one individual who pointed out that they were fully aware of the risks, but they weighed up that the damages could potentially happen, but might not. So they're going to play it by ear and save the costs on not having the cybersecurity, which I think is a very narrow-minded point of view, but I didn't tell them that at the time. But, you know, I think there's definitely more information about it now. And I think as the stats get scarier, I know that they're saying by 2025, the damages by cybersecurity will be as large as the third biggest economy in the world. I think it was, I don't know, 6 trillion or something like that. It was massive. And I think when the stats get scary like that, I think more and more people are going to pay attention. I think it's, as Chris and Mimi mentioned, it's going to be the education around how to deal with that. That's going to be key moving forward and changing people's behavior. But I think also another point to think, I think we can say what we will about GDPR, but I feel like it is taught, because it's gone from, oh, something you should worry about, to, all right, you're breaking the law. More people have definitely taken it into consideration that, you know, sharing certain pieces of information need more time and preparation, and you need to think about it more, about, you know, keeping things locked up, encrypted behind passwords and such. And I think that's one thing that people definitely have done a lot better. Obviously, it definitely could be better, but I think, yeah, being forced to take it in consideration has helped a lot.
It always helps, but I think the reality is that it's, I think, the ICO data and what our survey found as well is quite similar. 25% of charities are being affected by a cyber breach a year, essentially, which isn't an insignificant number when you consider that is anything else in any other realm of whatever you would compare it to. And it's a case of prevention is better than the cure, I think, a little bit with cybersecurity. And that is... it's ever evolving. I think in the briefing for this, we talk about, you know, putting a fire alarm after the fire, that sort of thing. And you don't want to be, you know, a lot like Mermaid, where in that instance, you don't want to be caught too late. Basically, you don't want to be caught short. And you know, there's a lot of simple things you can do in the interim to protect you in the long run. And doing those things, you know, we're not naive enough to say that that will protect you all the time. You know, we suffered our own cyber breach earlier this year. And what that taught us is that we have to go into, you know, we have to work going forward with the mindset that we will be breached again. And adopting that mindset will help us protect ourselves in the future, because, you know, cyber attackers don't stop. They don't say, oh, that phishing attack didn't work. Best pack your bag and move on. You know, they find something new. So we have to be just as clever. And I think I said it on a talk earlier this week, like, they're terrible people, terrible, terrible people. And we have to be better than they are. We have to be ahead of the game. We have to protect ourselves. We have to protect our people more than anything else, our staff, our donors, our service users. And that's our role. That's our job.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting with that 68% that you mentioned earlier, Chris, because cyber attackers are quite trendy. They know what's going on. They're keeping up to speed with everything. So, for example, with COVID coming in, the last summer saw over 12,000 COVID-related scams. And that's just something that they're keeping up to speed with everything and knowing what people are going to be worried about or aware of. And they're latching on the side of that. And I think that's what we've got to keep evolving our cybersecurity so that it is evergreen and it's keep developing, instead of kind of thinking, oh, we're okay, we've got it covered, we have the fire alarm in. If you're not checking the batteries, it might not work.
So much of that is about education as well, isn't it? Like, because I think when those new scams come in, I know that my mum's had a few phone calls in the past, and it's all, they've always scared her straight away by being like, you need to be, have you broken the law, or have you, and they've sounded very official to her. And I think that the more you can spot those things, because I have to say, even I had a phishing like email before and panicked about it before getting halfway through it and being like, no, this is wrong, something's not right here. So I think that education piece and constantly keeping up to date with that is really important as well.
Yeah, I read something really interesting, actually, that a lot of the scams happen because of human emotions. Mm. So because they latch onto that human emotion side of things, they make you feel that fear of, oh God, actually, do I need to do something with this? Do I need to action something? So then straight away you're in their hands.
And they are, they're terrible people. They are the malevolent beings in the dark, as I romantically put them.
Unbelievably spooky.
Yeah, they are the spookiest.
Spookiest.
So I'm not really a like a big fan of horror stories, even though I signed up to present this podcast. I very much prefer a happy ending. So I think maybe we should end on a positive note. So what change would you like to see, or what sort of advice would you give? I know we've touched a little bit on this, but yeah, like give us your tips.
People are the solution for me. I mean, and that kind of goes against the mold of being from a tech organization, but tech needs to be used by people. Whether it's, you know, owning up to a breach and getting out in front of it, whether it's talking about it, which is critically important, I believe, at the minute. You know, there's a lot of people that suffer breaches, but as far as we can see, there's only a handful ever talking about it. It's those learnings that are invaluable to other organisations who will inevitably go through the same thing. That is incredibly important for the sector to grow as a whole and get more, become more cyber aware. It's on people to buy in, you know, whether it's specific tech solutions, whether it's a cyber resilience strategy, you know, creating sustainability for your organization through protecting your staff, users, donors, that sort of thing. And it's on people to be cyber leaders, as I kind of said earlier. It's, you know, it's on leaders within charities, you know, exec level, to educate their own staff members from sort of top down. But as I said earlier, it's about people within organisations taking ownership and responsibility as well, and sharing that accountability throughout the organisation. You know, if you're about to hit send on an email, being in a marketing team, is the list you've compiled GDPR compliant? Are you sending this out in the right manner? Are you sharing any personal data? Are you about to send a BCC email? Are the people definitely in the BCC list? Like, all little things like that, we need to be thinking as people within charities with a cybersecurity mindset. So for me, people are the solution going forward. Getting the training, getting yourself the expertise, and sharing that knowledge with others.
I mean, I think a good way to follow up what Chris said is that I think, because I was going to say the same thing about getting people on board is the key thing. But I think it's also getting people on board and then also keep running with it constantly, because the world of viruses and cyber attacks is constantly evolving with new things like crypto jacking and Bitcoin miners and such. It's not just learning about things in the past, which, because I feel like people are still playing catch up. It's also looking forward to what's coming up next. And I think everyone needs to be aware of some of these other things. And personally, I think they're really interesting. I mean, the fact that someone can literally make money by mining Bitcoin on your computer is fascinating. Obviously not good, terrible, very spooky, but it is very fascinating. And I think it's something that you can make quite interesting and educational for your team. But yeah, you've got to be aware of the new attacking methods. And you need to teach a team about all of those too, because it's all well and good everyone learning exactly how their antivirus software works and how to make sure that they're not clicking on phishing emails, but they also need to be aware of what's coming up and what is the new trends in cybersecurity.
Did you set yourself a limit for how often you're going to say spooky?
I was meant to count. I told you and
I think that's what Sash is doing,
times.
Isn't it?
I was a limit of 10.
I think it's great. I think definitely, yeah, people are a huge thing. But I do think what we've got to remember is we do have the tech to support us as well. And we do have to kind of take responsibility for that tech. So going back to the WannaCry attack and the $4 billion in losses, the sad reality is that people, if people had have updated their Microsoft and their Windows and everything like that, that wouldn't have had such a dramatic effect. It would have been stopped quite early on. So I think it is Avast that we use, but I love it because it's in the bottom right-hand corner of my screen and it does this like traffic light system where it goes yellow and that tells you, okay, you need to do your update soon. Otherwise, the computer's going to start slowing down, and it does. And I get really frustrated with it. And I realize it's because I need to do an update. It then goes red when you really need to do an update and everything does just go to a halt. And then I tend to get an email from Siv or Stuart where it's like, you need to start your computer. And that's really helped me with working from home, because instead of having that kind of interaction with everyone in the office and making sure you're turning off your computer and you're doing your updates, you've still got that constant reminder of, are you looking after your tech? Are you making sure that you're updated? And if not, this is what you need to do. And I think that's so important.
I think these things sound more intimidating than they often are as well, don't they? Like patch management, I was like, what on earth is that? And then it's literally just updating your apps when they tell you to do it.
When we should write an article and that's it. Just
what is patch management? Open the sentence.
It is literally.
It sounded so, and also the same as the word cyber. I think that's what, you know, I think people just panic when they hear that word. And actually, there's lots of different ways to find help out there. One of the lessons from Digital Fundraising Day, I believe, was about looking to your supporters and seeing what skills you've got in the organisation, things like that. So yeah, there's plenty of people out there willing to help. I think, you know, we're one of them.
Yeah, I think we're always here to help anyone listening. But shameless plug on our own podcast.
You can't do it on your own podcast.
I think they're already here.
Yeah, they're already here. But on a personal level, like there's lots of things you can just do as, you know, just things like two-factor authentication. I know it's one thing that I literally do all the time. It's one thing I've had to do on my PlayStation account now because it keeps getting hacked. And so it always links through to my phone because it makes things just that much harder for anybody to hack in because they'll need access to your phone as well as your passwords. But also, you know, making sure that you're just not, I think people are wisened up to a lot of things about not going onto dodgy websites and downloading things, but also making sure you're doing regular scans of your computer. I think it's one thing that sometimes the antivirus software, you know, it kind of does this for you, but sometimes it's good to do a real good deep clean just in case something's come through, which is a little dodgy that they want to remove. But these are like little things that are really easy. And I just do them sort of every now and then just to make sure that everything's safe. But yeah, making sure you're using all these new methods to stay secure and spook free.
I think also one thing that's quite important, I think we've spoken a lot about stories that make quite a big noise, but sometimes these hackers are quite quiet in the background, working, watching kind of how you work, looking at how you type your emails, kind of getting to know the different platforms you use. And then they then take a step and kind of send an email on your behalf after learning about how you work. So that's where Chris is right, where you need to be able to talk to each other. So if you receive an email from a colleague where you're like, this sounds like you, it seems like something that you'd ask me, but also it's a bit weird, message each other in a completely different way. So don't reply back to that email because they're able to kind of block that reply, but send each other a message on WhatsApp, Teams, have a phone call, something like that, just to quickly double check if this is actually something that they want you to do. Because we've had that a couple of times where they somehow know that someone's not going to be in the office. And especially with us working from home, people aren't in the same room anymore. So it's good to be aware of that.
Yeah, and remember any phishing emails that you get as well to report them to phishing@gov.uk as well. I think I've got that right. We'll post it in resources afterwards. It's a great little link set up by email account set up by the NCSC to report any phishing stuff too as well, because we get them all the time. And Mimi's point was great there. I think, as you were saying, you don't know how long they're there for. I think when we had our breach, they were in the specific account for 10 days before we even realised they were there, setting up rules, setting up email, different sorts of email things, just waiting for a useful piece of information to come across, to come into the inbox. Thankfully, it never happened, but we were lucky in that instance. And lucky, and in a sense, there was no personal information shared or dangerous personal information shared, but also well-planned in a way that we don't really keep any of that stuff as well. So yeah, you've got to be aware. Keep your wits about you.
It's like any horror story, isn't it? Like, don't split up. Don't keep everything in one place. No.
Cyber trip. How can you do that as you're being chased by a cyber attacker?
Yeah, it's when they're in horror movies and they don't turn the light on before going.
Yeah, exactly.
It really annoys me.
Honestly. Or just when they hear a sound and they go and investigate, just leave. Yeah. Just leave.
What's the equivalent online?
Change your password and come away.
Call the police, report it. Get on that, report the incident.
Get on that phishing website. Tell people that it's happening. That's the way. Yeah, I think that's really great. I think that's, we've learned some really good lessons, carved out some really good lessons there. Thank you everyone for creeping it real. And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this spooky edition of the Charity Digital Podcast, please rate and subscribe through your usual podcast provider. It helps other people to find us. And if you want more information on how to improve your cybersecurity, we have plenty more content about that on our website. So yeah, thank you for listening. See you next time.
See you later.
See you.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye-bye.